time for your Saturday morning coffee with Reese Boyd.
So wake me up when it's all over, when I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was finding myself and I didn't know I was gone.
Reese Boyd is on right now. Talk 94.5.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Saturday Morning Coffee, the Reese Boyd Radio Hour. It is Saturday, March the 9th. Welcome to Saturday Morning Coffee, 7:07 on your Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us here on the big show. I am, of course, Reese Boyd, local attorney here in town with the firm of Davis and Boyd, attorneys at law. Welcome to this Saturday morning excursion into the news, current events, everything going on in this crazy world that we think you need to know here at Saturday Morning Coffee. We're here to talk to you about limited government, lower taxes, all the things that mean more freedom. What a crazy week it's been. A lot to talk about, so much going on in the world. We had a primary in South Carolina since the last time we were in the studio. We had Super Tuesday since the last time we were in the studio. We had the State of the Union. A lot going on in the world. A lot to talk about, so much going on to reflect on and unpack. So look forward to being with y'all this morning here on Saturday Morning Coffee. Thanks for joining us. Joined here in the studio, as always, by producer extraordinaire, Dr. Glenn Dye. Dr. Dye, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Reese.
Man, what a week we've had.
Yeah, full of news.
What a crazy week.
What a crazy president we have.
Yeah, we were, of course, we were in the studio a couple of weeks ago. We had a scheduling conflict last week, Glenn. We couldn't make it in for Saturday Morning Coffee last Saturday, but we had a great show the week before with Dr. Ben Carson. Got a lot of feedback on that. What a great interview that was. And, of course, that was the day of the South Carolina primary where Donald Trump won a sweeping victory right here in the Palmetto State. So, and that set up Super Tuesday, which was another sweeping victory for Donald Trump. So I think Nikki Haley won Vermont and D.C., two Republican strongholds. But aside from Vermont and D.C., it was a sweep for the former president. So we got a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on, a lot going on there. And we also had the stellar performance by our current president last night with the State of the Union. Glenn, how'd that resonate with you?
I am so motivated. He has motivated me more than any president in history, and he's got me so excited to elect somebody else.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I will say this, Glenn. There's one of the things that has been sort of gnawing on me lately is I'm more fearful. Fearful is not the right word. I'm more concerned about the state of the republic and the health of our democracy than I have ever been in my lifetime.
Took him 40-some minutes to get to the border.
The
speech, and that's the number one concern of Americans right now.
And for a man who was going to be the uniter-in-chief, he is still incredibly divisive. I think he is one of the most divisive presidents in our history, in my opinion, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
I felt like Obama was a divisive president. I felt like Obama, as we've said on this show before, I felt like Obama was going, my hope, I didn't vote for him, but once he was elected, he was the president. I was going to support him. I thought he would be our first post-racial president.
Right.
Who had a real opportunity to, in a very lasting way, that would go down in history in a very, in a very meaningful way, as a sort of a watershed president to finally put the racial wounds of the past behind us and move forward. And I feel like it was a total whiff, a total swing and miss on that missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. And if anything, it seems as though that administration put us on a path toward increased racial tension and strife in this country, not lessened, not more racial harmony, but more racial strife. And I feel like Biden is at least as divisive as Obama, if not more.
Oh, I think so, too.
I think he's well more divisive.
I really do.
Than Obama.
I just can't believe that his priorities in last night's State of the Union address, Thursday night's State of the Union address, were not right out of the gate the things that America and that his voters coming up in November are mostly concerned about. The border, our safety, We have criminals and terrorists in our country now because of him. We've had many deaths because of him.
No question about it.
Because of those orders that he did in the first 100 days of his...
Think about, Glenn, think about all the murders that have been committed by legals.
Legals commit
murder. I mean, even if, first of all, he said it wrong.
He did say it wrong.
He botched it.
Yeah.
And made a mess of...
expected that, though. We expected some botching.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I just didn't know that his priority would be how many potato chips are in the same size bag now that, you know...
Shrinkflation. The biggest thing you have to worry about, Glenn, is the number of potato chips in the bag.
Yeah.
That's your problem.
Right.
You know, I've shared this before. I'll share this again. I did not catch all of the speech live. I watched bits and pieces of it later. I was in a long-winded mediation on Thursday that ran all day and then some, and then I had to rush to get to my daughter's soccer game. And so by the time I got home, I was just obliterated. I watched a little bit of the speech, and I was just exhausted. So I watched bits and pieces of it yesterday. But, you know, it was probably one of the most negative, most uninspiring political speeches I've ever seen. And I can assure you that the problems that I face are not related to the number of potato chips in the bag
at
the grocery store. You know, we went out to dinner after the soccer game. And Glenn, as we often do now, I noticed, I'm thinking about how have our lives changed as a result of the Biden administration. That's one of the things I took away from the speech, is just thinking about. And we went out to dinner. We went, not a fancy restaurant. We went to Jimmy John's.
Okay.
Love the subs at Jimmy John's. And as we often do, my wife and I have started splitting a sandwich. We'll often split meals when we go out simply because the costs are skyrocketing. Mm. When in 2018, 2019, I recall specifically, I had sort of a benchmark in my mind. I'd take my family of four out to dinner, and we could get a decent meal for around 30 bucks.
Right.
Sometimes 35, sometimes a little bit less if you ate something cheaper, but around 30 bucks.
Yep.
I can take my family to a fast food restaurant today, and we will easily spend 40 to 50 bucks on fast food. And we did that at Jimmy John's, and one of us was splitting a meal. We didn't even get a sandwich for everybody. We split sandwiches.
Well, a hamburger, fries, and a Coke at one of the famous places around town, 20 bucks.
20 bucks?
Yeah, 20 bucks.
So
and every time we go out to eat, I actually said it the other night, not as a complaint to Laura that we're going out too much, but every time I got the bill and I was like, here it is again, $77. Every time it's like 75 bucks, and it's not like we're having an extravagant meal.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's crazy. Want to remind you guys, so it's really frustrating, Glenn, and we're going to be developing this a little bit more as we go forward. I'm going to be talking about this. There's several things I'm working on, but I really think we have got to be committed as a nation, as a country, as a people, as a culture, to the ideals that have bound us together. And those bonds are being unraveled by some leftists. You've got people with various agenda that are not the agenda of America, you know, that are, and unfortunately many of them are in places of power. But we've got to start working on binding up those ties that hold us together and working to repair the fabric of this country, or I'm really fear for where we're headed. And so we'll be talking about that more. We've got some other issues that we're going to be sharing with you talking. I've been looking at the JFK assassination, Glenn. I want to get to some of that on the program. We probably won't get to that today, but we'll be talking about that more. It's interesting how I that topic came into my sort of thoughts lately, and I've been working on that. But we've got a lot to talk about here on the show today. We're also going to be joined by Josh Kimbrell. Josh is a member of the South Carolina Senate. We had constitutional carry passed this week. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Did you put your gun in your car yet?
Oh, yeah. I'm packing, baby. The governor signed it. Oh, yeah. What is the effective date? I don't even know. I didn't even look at that.
I thought it was effective.
Effective immediately.
I did. He signed it into law. It didn't say anything about a specific date.
I did not specifically see the effective date. So
the left is saying we're just going to see more murders. We're going to see more people killed. Well, hopefully it's the perpetrators, you know, of the crimes that are getting killed by everyday citizens because now they're carrying.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I wonder if the press will give it attention. I anticipate, and there. Listen, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We live in a broken world. People make mistakes. There probably are going to be some unintentional discharge of firearm accidents, and the left is going to try to make much of that and convince us that we're all stupid for backing constitutional carry. And I mean that's not going to be a surprise.
Aren't we like the last state, the 26th state of Republican? Aren't we like
Last Republican state to adopt it?
Yeah.
And so yes, that will happen. They will take advantage of whatever unfortunate accident may occur. Some well-intentioned individual accidentally discharges a firearm, something. We'll hear about that. But the point being, Glenn, if you look at the data says that people are safer where they have ready access to firearms. If you look at the states where crime is the biggest problems and people are the least safe, it's the states with the most aggressive gun control regulations in place. Yep. So a lot to talk about. We also want to talk to Senator Kimbrell about the DHEC reorganization bill that was making its way through the General Assembly this week. So a lot to talk about here on Saturday Morning Coffee. All that and some fine One Nation coffee to sip while we're at it. We'll be back right after these words from our sponsors. I'm Reese Boyd. That's Glenn Dye. Don't leave town.
Just a little baby girl is in me. Am I coming out of left field?
Folks, let me tell you about one of our favorite sponsors here at Saturday Morning Coffee. Of course, I'm talking about Conway Ford. We love all our sponsors here at Saturday Morning Coffee. But we especially love Conway Ford. It's Truck Month at Conway Ford. They just learned that they have won yet again the coveted Ford President's Award. And right now, in addition to all of that, it's Truck Month over at Conway Ford. And you can get really great deals, save big on all the remaining 2023 F-150s in stock. You get 1.9% financing for 72 months on any new 2023 F-150, plus no payment for 90 days. So check them out for complete details. But some great deals going on right now at Truck Month at Conway Ford over in Conway, the hometown dealership where you'll find the best buying experience around. They guarantee it. Conway Ford, it's worth the drive to Church Street in Conway and tell them you heard about it on Saturday Morning Coffee. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Saturday Morning Coffee, the Reese Boyd Radio Hour. Thanks for sticking with us here on Saturday Morning Coffee. Right now on the show, as promised, we're joined by Josh Kimbrell. Senator Josh Kimbrell is a member of the South Carolina State Senate. He's also the president of Exodus Aircraft LLC, a federally chartered Part 135 airline based in the upstate of South Carolina, and he represents Spartanburg County in the South Carolina State Senate. So he's an occasional guest here on Saturday Morning Coffee. We had a lot going on in the General Assembly this week, and he always gives us kind of the straight shooter's perspective on what's happening in Columbia. So we wanted to bring him on to the show this morning. Senator Kimbrell, welcome to Saturday Morning Coffee.
Always good to be with you, Reese. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Always a pleasure. Up your Saturday morning is going well.
You know, coffee's good. I buy the One Nation stuff y'all advertise now, so it's usually what I wake up and brew in the French press and the one day that I actually get to sit around for a minute.
Oh, good. Well, I appreciate you spending some of your valuable time with us this morning here on Saturday Morning Coffee. A lot going on in the General Assembly. We had constitutional carry passed this week. Also, I noticed we had a lot of discussion of DHEC and the bills to reform DHEC, and so I wanted to chat with you about that. But generally, just give us a quick overview. What's on your mind? What's either of those two topics, or what else is going on that you would love to share with us this morning?
Well, those certainly are the biggest topics of the week. There's other stuff coming down the pike, but 100% the constitutional carry and the debate over the state health department trying to restructure that have been huge debates in Columbia. Got a lot of play in the media, a lot of people with opinions on that. I will say I'm very pleased that we now are we've joined the ranks of other states that have constitutional carry, which means if you are a law-abiding citizen who can pass a background check, you are allowed to carry a gun and concealed or open without a permit. Now, there's stipulations. If you do something crazy with it, there are enhanced penalties. If you go point and present or shoot at somebody because you're bad traffic, we're going to hold that person more accountable if they don't have a permit. And additionally, if you're a criminal felon who tries to continue to possess a gun illegally, there's some penalties in there. But law-abiding citizens who've done the right thing, who are responsible folks. They have the right now in our state, as they do in most other Republican states, to keep and bear arms without having to ask the government permission to do it. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, amen. And we've been after this for a while, Josh, so this is a sort of a long time coming. I'm kind of surprised that it took us this long to get there, but congratulations on getting it done.
Well, the rules of the Senate make it kind of hard sometimes. You know, there's a lot of, we're called the deliberative body for a reason. There's good things about that. There's some drawbacks occasionally too, but ultimately, yeah, it's been multiple years we've been fighting over this. It's been, I think since I've been in, so since at least the last election cycle over the last 4 years, it's come up repeatedly, probably three times at least out of the last 4 years. So it's been a pretty much a perennial debate. And I'm glad to see it happen. It was a kind of the confluence of events that allowed it to occur. I wasn't sure it would pass, but happy that it did. And some, you know, there's some people who wish it would, we wouldn't have had any enhanced felon possession penalties with it. But here's the deal. If somebody's a criminal who's going to go use a gun to commit a crime, I have no problem holding that person accountable. And ultimately, that's what the governor kept wanting to have. And there was a big attempt to pass enhanced felon possession without expanding constitutional carry. And a lot of us who were determined to get constitutional carry said, well, no, governor, respectfully, we're willing to give you that enhanced penalty, but we're also going to ask for expanded rights for law-abiding citizens. We got both, and happy that it finally got across the finish line.
So Glenn and I were talking about this in the prior segment before the break. What the effective date? Is it effective immediately, or does it take effect at a later date?
If I remember correctly, I'd have to go back and review the conference committee one more time, I guess, but I'm pretty sure it's immediate.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, it went into effect yesterday when the governor's ink signed, ink dried. So
when the ink dried.
I'm pretty sure it's in effect right this minute. There was no, when we debated it in the Senate, there was no like build-in period. It was immediate. So yeah. I don't think that got changed in the House. I think it's the law right this second.
Yeah. Well, very good. And that, congratulations on that. That is so awesome. I know many of us have been advocating for this, and I think it's just a simple argument. Josh and Glenn and I were talking about this before the break. The minute something goes wrong, the leftists, the Democrats, the legacy media, they're going to try to say this is what happens when you let people, you know, walk around Main Street with guns. And we need not be shocked when that happens. It will happen because mistakes do happen. People make mistakes. Things happen. But if you look at the data, as we were discussing before the break, people are safer. Crime is less of a problem in the states where gun control legislation is less restrictive. The more freedom you give to law-abiding citizens to access firearms to protect themselves, the less crime you have. And that's demonstrably true from the data that we have. So
it's true in every state where constitutional carry has been adopted. They always give you these horror stories. There's not a single state where constitutional carry has been passed into law where people are less safe. The states where you can't walk down the street are places like New York or California or Illinois that have the strictest gun laws in the country. I mean, the old expression is an armed society is a polite society, and if the only people that have guns are the criminals, then we all got problems.
We have a
and
real
that's
problem.
That's what happens in the blue states.
Yeah. Well, this question comes to mind as well, and if you don't know off the top of your head, no worries, we'll look it up. But this occurred to me. I was in a mediation this week, and I walked in, and the building had a no concealed weapons posted on the entrance. And I thought to myself, how does that mix with constitutional carry? Do businesses, or are there certain facilities that have the ability to exempt themselves or are exempted, or is it just wherever, whenever you can carry?
No, private establishments still get to make that decision, right? As much as I don't think it's advisable, I don't love gun-free zones. Mm-hmm. But an individual business still has that right, and we did not infringe upon private property rights in that regard. So if you're a business owner that says you don't want somebody to carry there, you still have the right to placard it. Yeah. That didn't change.
No.
I mean, I know there are people who disagree and think the government should come in and make them let you carry it in, and I understand that argument. I've heard that too. But as much as I believe in the right to keep and bear arms and your right to do so freely, I also believe in the right of a private business to make a decision, and that's we kind of struck that balance.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think that's the right balance because the Second Amendment is the Second Amendment, but also we have a basic property right. And if I want to run a hamburger stand or a law firm or whatever I want to run, and I don't want people coming in with guns, I think as a private property owner owning in the establishment, I think that should be my right. So I agree with you.
That's right. And it still is under this bill.
Yeah. So you mentioned one thing earlier that caught my attention. You said people who can pass a background check. You don't have to get checked, right? You don't have to have a background check. That you just have to be somebody who could pass one, correct?
Well, I mean is to buy the gun, right?
So I got you.
You still have background checks to buy a gun. So as long as you, yeah, I mean, look, if you have a gun that your grandpa gave you or your mom gave you or dad or whatever, yeah, you don't have to go get background checks to carry it.
Okay.
But back to the stipulation of being, if you have a criminal record and you get caught with that, there's an enhanced penalty to it. But if you don't have a criminal record, in other words, to your point, you could pass a background check. Yes, you have the right to carry it. But what I was more referring to is if you don't have a gun right now and you go buy it, you still got to pass the background check.
You still have to pass.
You normally would.
Yeah. I got you. Very good. So it's going to be very interesting to see one question that you mentioned or one thing you mentioned that I thought was interesting. What was the confluence of events that finally allowed us, if you can summarize that, if that's a short answer, if not, we'll move on.
Well, it came down to enhanced felon possession, right? I mean, the governor and the state of the state said he wanted that, and there was an effort by a number of folks to say, look, let's give the governor what he wants on enhanced felon in possession penalties as a standalone bill. And most of us who were wanting constitutional carry said no. So we knew the only way to get constitutional carry passed was to combine those two, let them travel together. Same section of code, so it's germane. And so three or four senators who may not have voted for the bill without enhanced felon in possession penalties came around and voted for it because of them. So I think that was the confluence of events. If you had two competing interests out there, we were able to combine and balance those interests and get a bill passed.
Well, congratulations, Josh. I'll give you another ding. Well done to you and everyone else in the Senate who helped make this happen, everybody in the House. I know it's been a long-term effort, and I'm so proud that we finally got it done here in South Carolina. Listen, we've got to roll into a break. Can you stick with us? There was a lot more I wanted to cover with you. Are you able to stick with us to a break?
Absolutely. I'll get another cup of coffee. Let's do a break, and I'll stick around.
All right, folks. We're talking to Senator Josh Kimbrell from the Upstate District in Spartanburg, South Carolina, in the South Carolina State Senate. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors. I'm Reese Boyd. Don't leave town. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Saturday Morning Coffee, the Reese Boyd Radio Hour. Talking to Josh Kimbrell, member of the South Carolina State Senate this morning. Josh, thanks for sticking with us here on Saturday Morning Coffee.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
By the way, that's a little Indigo Girls for y'all on Saturday Morning Coffee. Glenn, we got a couple of Indigo Girls tickets I think we're going to be giving away. Not today, but I've been told we're going to have a few tickets for an Indigo Girls concert coming up.
Where are they playing?
They're going to be playing at my alma mater, Davidson College.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so
that's awesome.
The music reminded me of that, so we'll get to that later. But Josh, thanks again for sharing your Saturday morning with us. I also wanted to ask you about the DHEC issue that's been, you know, talked a lot about on social media. A lot of folks were sort of sounding the alarm that we were creating a state health czar under the governor to do all kinds of nefarious things. And I'm always, you know, my ears and I perk up when I see those kinds of emails being passed around. Obviously, that's a concern. Always want to be on the lookout and on guard and vigilant to keep that from happening. But what is this, you know, sort of the nature of DHEC and what we're doing to it and what we're trying to do to it from your perspective?
Well, Senate Bill 2 last year got passed that broke DHEC up. We separated it. It was the largest agency, one of the largest agencies in the state. It covered way too much ground. I mean, whether you were dealing with a real estate transaction or you were opening a restaurant or going to get your kids' vaccination records, all of that went through DHEC. It covered literally everything. You had swimming pool certification under DHEC. It was a behemoth.
Oh, yeah.
An unwily agency that just really was an impediment, in many cases, to economic growth, an impediment to people's personal freedoms, and really, in my opinion, didn't handle the COVID crisis very well back in 2020. So a lot of us felt like it was too big. Senator Peeler, the chairman of the Finance Committee from Cherokee County up here in the upstate near me, certainly one of the most powerful people in the state, certainly in the legislature, helped to push this bill, and a lot of us supported them on that to bust up DHEC, break down this agency, keep it from being such a behemoth that was so inefficient. And so once we got rid of DHEC, you had to enable the functions that DHEC managed under different departments. So we created a Department of Health that doesn't handle swimming pools or fry cookers or retaining ponds, but just deals with public health policy. That part of DHEC went into a health agency that's now been established through the Senate Bill 915, and we have a Secretary of Health instead of a DHEC director. Now, what people flipped out about is they said, oh, my gosh, you created a health department. No, we actually already had one. DHEC was the health department.
Yeah.
We just made it smaller. We shrunk the size of it. We made it more accountable, less costly, and more efficient. Additionally, for those that are worried about emergency powers, we made it to where the Secretary of Health is much more accountable than the DHEC director has ever been. The DHEC director actually had a board. It was a DHEC board. That was an appointed board. Nobody knew who those members of the appointed board are. There's really no accountability to the Senate or the legislature generally with the DHEC board. We got rid of the DHEC board. So now the governor appoints the Secretary of Health, and then the Secretary of Health would report to the governor, and his advice and consent has to be confirmed by the Senate. And if this person behaves badly, they can be fired by the governor or the legislature. It actually makes the health department more accountable and less likely to have a health czar. If you want a health czar, the closest we ever had to that, and I don't think we've ever had a health czar here like you saw with Fauci or you've seen in places like New York or California.
Mm-hmm.
But the closest you would come to that would be the DHEC director in the old form. It's less likely to be the case now. What led to the online chatter is Title 44 of South Carolina Code, existing law, has certain procedures in there about what to do in an emergency. There's certain statutory provisions right now that give certain emergency authorities in the event of an outbreak. In other words, you have a tuberculosis outbreak at a middle school. It says that the local law enforcement authorities have to work with the health agency to enforce a quarantine or something like that. We didn't create that. That wasn't new language. We didn't expand those powers. Those powers have been in place since 1908. And this health care bill doesn't grant any new power to anybody. Actually, the governor is the only person that can declare a state of emergency. And after COVID in 2020, a lot of us were concerned about the expansive powers, and we had a rolling state of emergency. So Governor Master, basically and I'm not blaming him, but this is the way it's always been done. When he declared the COVID emergency the first time, that was for 30 days. And then every 30 days, they would just renew the order.
Yeah.
And so you ended up having over a year and a half of the state, I think close to 2 years of the state being under a state of emergency because the governor just rolled it. We changed that. And so the South Carolina legislature changed that a couple of years ago to say the governor doesn't have the authority to do these kind of rolling states of emergency without having the legislature approve them after a certain period of time. I think it's 30 or 60 days. So if people are worried about having a repeat of the COVID lockdowns, we've made it much harder for that to ever happen. And I would argue it can't happen again in South Carolina. And this health care bill does not enhance emergency powers for the health secretary.
Well, and I think that is, and I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear your take on it. I had looked at that and sort of reached the same conclusion. I think a lot of people, Josh, were looking at the legislation and looking at old language that was already on the books and looking at that as if it was new language to be added to the code. But during the pandemic, DHEC was not always, you know, they kind of pushed back on McMaster when he said no mask mandates. You know, DHEC was a little bit of a rogue agency during the pandemic, in my opinion, and did not really cooperate with McMaster's, you know, attempts to sort of minimize some of the regulatory impacts of the emergency declaration, right? Is that
they were a lot of a rogue agency during that. They ignored the governor a lot. Again, going back to the fact that the DHEC director largely answers to a DHEC board, or did we got rid of that?
But, yeah.
I mean, no. So essentially, think about even not just COVID, but let's go back to Pride Month last year is a good example. Most South Carolinians are tolerant folks. You can do what you want. We're not sitting here saying you can't, if you have a different opinion on LGBTQ issues, have that opinion. But I've never thought it was appropriate for a state agency to go out there and push an agenda. So during Pride Month last year, you had Dr. Simmer ordering every DHEC branch to fly rainbow flags and promote a bunch of literature related to LGBTQ. And I thought that was inappropriate. I don't think the DHEC agency, the health agency, should be pushing an agenda on sex one way or the other. But they did it because they could. And we basically, you look at that, you look at how they pushed back on vaccine mandates. They were spending millions of dollars on billboards and ads pushing the vaccine, even when most folks disagreed with that policy. So DHEC was rogue. And I think that what we've done is make that agency, the new health agency, be much more accountable than DHEC. And I think folks that are worried about the language you referenced, you're exactly right. That's existing statutory code. And they're reading something in the bill thinking that we've added that. All the way the bills work, as you know, it's a strike and insert. You take the section of code, you strike out what we're changing, you add the things we're going to add. Nobody touched those emergency powers. Now, there is another bill that I'm a co-sponsor of and a few of us are, called Senate Bill 975, that does address those emergency powers from 1908. So where the health care bill 915, Senate Bill 915, just establishes a new department and changes the structure, there is other legislation to look at those emergency powers too. And I think you'll see us have that conversation. But anybody who thinks that we've created Faucian dystopia in South Carolina and set up a health care czar, that's just inaccurate.
Yeah. Well, Josh, we got another minute or so. Any final thoughts you want to leave with us? Any parting wisdom you have to share with our listeners?
Well, I would ask your folks to look up a bill that I've introduced that we're trying to get passed with. It's in judiciary now. I think we're going to get it on the floor, called Senate Bill 1126. It's a resolution, a joint resolution, to ask for a constitutional referendum to the voters to amend the state constitution to change one word. Right now, under Article 2, Section 4, about voting rights, it says that every citizen of the United States and of the state of South Carolina has the right to vote. Now, I agree with that. I think that sounds innocuous enough. But states like California, Massachusetts, New York, Vermont, they've used similar language in their constitution and said, well, that's a floor, not a ceiling. And so municipalities and school boards have started extending the right to vote to illegal immigrants and people who are not citizens of the state of the country. So we're trying to make a change there and say, under the South Carolina Constitution, we're going to say only, so we're going to strike every, say only citizens of the United States and the state of South Carolina could vote. That way there's no ambiguity and no city or school board anywhere in South Carolina can go push for illegal immigrants to vote. Our people aren't citizens of the state or the country. I think that's a really important thing to do in light of this open borders crisis we have. So I'd encourage folks to check out Senate Bill 1126.
1126. Amen. We'll give you a ding for that. I'll be looking at that, Josh, and we'll be talking about that more. Well, listen, thanks so much for your time this morning. We've got to go into a hard break, but always enjoy having you on the show, Josh, and come back anytime. Have a great day, okay?
Always good to be with you. Enjoy this Saturday.
All right. Thank you, sir. Folks, it's Senator Josh Kimball from Spartanburg, and we'll be right back after these words from our sponsors with more Saturday Morning Coffee. I'm Reese Boyd. Don't leave town. Morning, everybody. Welcome back to Saturday Morning Coffee, the Reese Boyd Radio Hour. Man, I want to thank Josh Kimball. What a great, refreshing voice he is to have in the Senate. We could use some more like him, I think.
Yeah. I would like to hear what he thought of the president's State of the Union and the Republicans' rebuttal, of course.
Oh, yeah. The uniter in chief. Chief uniter among us.
And I can't remember the young lady's name that did the
oh my gosh, if you hadn't asked me, the senator from Alabama.
Yes.
What is
her
name?
I can't remember her name, but I like the way that she delivered it.
She is Katie Britt.
Yeah, Katie Britt. At first I thought she's just being too sweet. She's being too sweet, but she got serious about kitchen table, you know, concerns, things that we as Americans are discussing around the kitchen table, which President Biden did not. I mean, maybe the potato chip thing, maybe he did, and there's not enough, not Milky Way, but the other one, Snickers bars or something. They've gotten smaller.
Everything's, well, not everything, but a lot of things are getting smaller. And, you know, it's funny, Glenn, it is impacting. I got into a Facebook sort of exchange with some people yesterday, and I said, look, people don't need anybody to tell them whether they're better off or not.
Right.
We know. Yeah. We know whether you're better off now than you were at the same time in 2019. Mm-hmm. I tell people, look, you've got to carve out the pandemic. The pandemic was an outlier, and it's really not a fair comparison to make, you know, long-range judgments who was better off when based on what happened during the pandemic. That was a one-off, or hopefully we pray it was a one-off. But the reality is most people know that they were better off this time in 2019 than they are today. They don't need some statistician to tell them that they're wrong.
Or a president that lies almost every time he speaks. You know, we went to the gas station, right? It's what, 311 now? It was 289 a couple of weeks ago. We're going into summer, so the prices are still going to continue to rise on gas, but food prices are just out of control as far as the regular consumer is concerned. The inflation's going down and blah, blah, blah. if it hits you in your pocketbook, it hits you in your wallet, you notice he is just out of touch.
People know, and one thing I thought about, Glenn, is inflation is not, it's not just a matter of the meals that you that you take with your family costing more money and cutting into your ability to enjoy life, which certainly that happens, but long-term inflation is extremely devastating to the ability of families and individuals over the long haul to build a life of financial security.
Right.
It is much harder in a land where inflation is running along at, you know, 4, 5, 6%. It's much harder to do that. If there's any inflation much beyond that, it really becomes impossible to build any kind of financial security because you're not earning anything on your money. The money that you save is always being devalued every day by an irresponsible, profligate government who is devaluing the money every day.
Right.
You know, and so inflation works for the benefit of those who would govern us. It doesn't work for our benefit, right?
Right.
And so it's the invisible tax. And I was in a seminar this week and they were talking about, you know, when they started Social Security was not taxed. Then they came back, ironically, under a Republican administration and started a program to tax Social Security benefits. Well, guess what? Those Social Security tax levels, the brackets, are based on fixed dollars. And so as you inflate those dollars and everything becomes a question of, you know, what used to be $10,000 is now $10,500. Everything becomes more devastating. You know, the tax impact of all that, of that taxation becomes more burdensome on you, the taxpayer.
Right.
You know, it's a very problematic thing. And the goal of the government should be price stability. I'm convinced the goal of the government should be price stability, because even what the Federal Reserve has set as its goal, which is 2% inflation, over the long haul, over the course of your lifetime of earning and then saving for retirement, even a consistent 2% inflation eats into your ability to have a meaningful retirement.
Your Social Security benefits are not worth what they were 10 years ago.
You know? Absolutely. So,
I mean, people saying, oh, no, you need to wait till you're 70. By that time, the value may come out of it altogether. I mean, you're getting some benefit, basically an 8% increase for each year that you wait. But most Americans do not have the emergency fund that Dave Ramsey always talked about.
No.
You should have $1,000 in an account by itself that just says, this is my emergency fund in case something happens. Really, what you need is 6 months worth of paychecks to be more comfortable. Most people in this country don't have the emergency fund. They're living paycheck to paycheck. And they're really, literally, one or two paychecks away from losing their home or where they live, their rent, you know.
So I'm convinced that people are smart enough to know. They know better than anybody whether they're better off or not. And I think the Biden lies, they're not getting traction, and they hopefully will not get traction because people are smarter than that. They realize they're not better off. And, you know, there was some other stuff I wanted to talk about today. Nikki Haley, of course, out of the race.
Yeah.
Did you catch her farewell speech?
I did.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I think that she will make up with Trump. I feel it.
Are you for real?
I do. I feel like she was not hard enough in her speech as she's leaving. I still see the window is still open. President Trump is forgiving.
He's forgiven people
in the past.
I had a question in my mind, Glenn. I was wondering, because the political analyst in me always says, who is this speech written for?
Right.
And when she said it's his time for choosing, I'm thinking to myself, so you're telling, or you're suggesting to me, I think, that Trump is laying in bed at night worrying about the 20% of the people who did not vote for him and what he can do to appease them without offending the 80% of the people who did vote for him. And I'm thinking to myself, no, I don't really think he's losing a lot of sleep over that. No. I just don't think that's high on his list. I could be wrong.
But I do think before she started really hammering on Trump, I honestly think that would have been a great ticket, Trump Haley.
It could have been.
Yeah,
I think
it could have, should have, but it's not probably not going
to
happen.
I encouraged her not directly, but I let it be known. I floated a few balloons several weeks ago that I said, look, it's in Nikki Haley's best interest. Forget about what's in Donald Trump's interest or what's even in the Republican Party's interest. It's in Nikki Haley's best interest to get out of the race before or no later than when DeSantis did the same thing.
And endorsing Trump, which hasn't happened yet, and telling her voters to, you know, vote for Trump, because the only person left now, the other to vote for, is really Biden.
So, yeah, you're left with, you're going to either say, I'm sorry, just stay home, don't vote,
right,
or
right.
vote for Biden, or there's going to be some no labels option that I'm contemplating. Yeah. I don't see where that's going.
No.
That's not going anywhere.
No.
That would be, but I was not impressed by the speech, because I don't think it would really have resonated with much of anybody. It did not accomplish what I think she needed to accomplish with her exit. But nonetheless, that's just me. Take that and $3 and go get a cup of that fine One Nation coffee. Actually, One Nation coffee cheaper than $3. But you guys are encouraged to check out onenationcoffee.com. And don't forget to use that Saturday morning coffee promo code. And One Nation Coffee is where a portion of the proceeds benefit the One Nation Foundation, which benefits veterans and first responders. So one last piece of parting wisdom I wanted to share, Glenn. I've been thinking about this very divisive State of the Union speech. What binds us together? What is it? You know, the American experience is summed up in the words of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal, and they're endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the problem today, in a nutshell, that we have is there are people that aren't espousing those benefits and those that belief, and we've got to get back to that. We've got to focus this country on the values that have made this country great, and what is exceptional about the American experience.
Right.
That's a tall task, but it's what we have to do as a nation, folks. Let me leave you. I want to thank again Josh Kimbrell and our special guest Josh Kimbrell for joining us today. Let me leave you with these parting words from the Proverbs. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. That's Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Y'all have a great week. Be blessed, and we'll see you next week for more Saturday Morning Coffee.
Thanks for waking up with Saturday Morning Coffee, the Reese Boyd Radio Hour on Talk 94.5.